Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They have to be my views, the views of our guests, and the views of our callers. And our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. But please don't hold a call until we ask for calls this evening. We have this hour Mr. Gus Stelzer, and Gus has been our guest many times in the past. Actually, do you mind my telling how old you are, Gus?
No, you can go ahead.
He's 91 years old. But Gus has seen a lot of America. At one time, he worked at a very key position with General Motors. At one time, he was in charge of all sales on the West Coast. And I'm going to let Gus just tell you a little bit about his background with General Motors, about his thoughts on what we are doing in the way of intentionally and purposely and maliciously shipping our jobs overseas, the transfer of our jobs to China and to other countries, Mexico, is not by accident. It's part of a long-range plan. There are people who have a different vision of the world. They don't really believe in America. They really believe in globalism. They are doing what they're doing. I believe in an intentional effort to lower the living standards of the American people. Then you can read their plan in something called the Earth Charter, written by Gorbachev and Marie Strong and Stephen Rockefeller. It's posted on the Internet. It was to be adopted by the United Nations in 2002, but fortunately it wasn't. But that really doesn't matter. It's being implemented anyway, because there are people who look at the world differently. But let's go back in time to when Gus was in a key position certainly in the automotive industry here in California. Why don't you tell us a little bit about, of course, what happened when America really was one of the industrial leaders of the world?
Well, Stan, first of all, let me thank you for allowing me to be back on the air with you. By the way, how much time would you like to consume with me this evening?
Well, we have you scheduled for an hour.
An hour? Okay.
Right.
Well, then I'll try to be as brief as possible, but just as a little bit of a recap, I joined General Motors in 1935 at $3.50 a day as a permanent, as a temporary employee at $3.50 a day. And I was promoted about 20 some odd times, and in 1966 I became a senior executive of General Motors in charge of thousands of GM dealers with over 40,000 employees doing about $6 billion a year in sales. And when I reached the age of 58, I put in a request to the board of directors to allow me to retire under what they called a mutually satisfactory arrangement, because I was absolutely fed up. I couldn't stomach what was going on as our federal government was double-crossing the industry in which I was working that was abiding by our laws and allowing foreigners to come into this country with products that are made without any regard for our laws. They were double-crossing us. I finally got an approval for my retirement in 1976, and so I've been kind of freelancing on the matter of trade and economics ever since. And in 1994, I wrote a book called The Nightmare of Camelot, which had a subtitle of an exposure of the free trade Trojan horse. When I wrote the draft for that book, I submitted it to a half a dozen big-name publishers like Simon Schuster and so on, and not one of them was even interested in reading it. So I went ahead and got a small publisher to put it together with some editing help, and we ran off 10,000 copies. I had to pay $50,000 of my own money to get it published. And then I found that the newspapers, the principal newspapers in this country, like the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, the Washington Post, and all of the other big names, like the L.A. Times, they were not even interested in even recognizing that the book was being published. So you have to pardon me if I feel that there is an actual conspiracy going on to con many powers in our media and in our government that are deliberately withholding the concept of honesty in our trade policies. But fortunately, as a result of my own efforts, including several appearances on prior shows with Dr. Stan, we sold all of the 10,000 copies by early 1998, and I elected not to go with another publication because of the conditions prevailing at that time, and frankly, I was worn out trying to do all of the marketing myself. But about a year ago, there was an enterprising newspaper in Kalamazoo, Michigan, along with a bookbinding company, agreed to put the book out in a kind of a soft cover version, and with an introductory chapter by me to fill the gap between 1994 and currently as to what's happened since I wrote the book. And everything that's happened since then is 100% proof of all of the forecasts that I made in that 375-page book, even worse. And so I come to a conclusion now, and I will accept the word of a man by the name of David Walker. He is the nonpartisan Comptroller General of the United States, and he issued these words. He said, "We are headed for a literal, not a virtual, but a literal social and economic tsunami." And I agree with Dr. Walker on that. The crash of 1929 was a crash of the stock market that affected initially primarily shareholders, who many of whom, millions of whom, were wiped out. And then it triggered the Great Depression. But this next crash that is coming, and I feel it's going to happen within 2 or 3 years after the next president takes office. President Bush is not going to allow it to happen while he's in the White House. But whoever is going to take over the office is going to be the fall guy, just like Herbert Hoover was the fall guy for the follies of the 1920s. And it's going to happen 2 or 3 years after the next president is in office. The road that we are on now is not just a crash as it affects stockholders and shareholders on the stock market. It's going to be a crash of the United States government itself.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment with Mr. Stelzer. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Gus Stelzer, author of The Nightmare of Camelot. And we've had Mr. Stelzer on many times before and always enjoy his commentary. And he is saying that he is convinced there is going to be, you know, a major crash coming. He refers to it as a tsunami, and I think we've used that term ourselves, a financial tsunami. As he said, in the 30s, it was a crash of the stock market. This coming crash is going to involve every aspect of our society, including our government. Because, of course, if you destroy the stability of the economy and the currency of a nation, you destroy the very stability of a society. Uh-huh. And that's exactly what they've been doing. Not by accident, I assure you. They know exactly what they're doing. They just want the American people to know what lies ahead. So you pick up the story there.
Well, to bear in mind and support what you just said, Stan, publications like the Wall Street Journal, which I get, the New York Times, which I get every day, Business Week magazine, which I get every week, not that I like those publications, but I get them to find out what these people are up to so I know what they're doing to destroy this country. And each one of those publications that I mentioned is a subversive publication that is destroying America. And they're doing it by stealth, and by not allowing anyone to appear in their publications that will disagree with the concepts that they are putting out, which is globalization, and they don't want to hear anything from anybody, including me, as to what is wrong with their philosophies. Let me say it at the outset that the United States does not have a free market system in itself. We do not have a free market society. Anyone who says that we do is either a fool, doesn't know what's going on, or is a liar because he knows what's going on. And we don't have a free market society. To the contrary, the federal, state, and local governments have enacted millions and millions of tax and regulatory laws that account for over 80% of the cost of the average American product. Now, there is a general agreement among honest people that everyone who participates in a competitive activity must play by the same rules. In other words, like, for example, if you were in Las Vegas and you sat at a poker table and the house dealer said you got to ante up $100 in order to get in the hand, you take it for granted that no one is going to be permitted to reach for the jackpot. If you ended up anything less, if you ended up $10, nobody would be permitted to reach for the jackpot. But that is not the guiding principle of our trade policies. Our trade policies are inherently immoral, they are unconstitutional, and they are a shell game. And that is why we are headed for the kind of tsunami that Mr. Walker predicts. Furthermore, free trade has never worked in the history of this country over any sustained period of time. Most people don't realize that the Constitution of the United States, which was written in 1787, was written because of the failure of free trade between the 13 colonies and England, which had placed the 13 colonies in a state of economic chaos to such a degree that Captain Daniel Chase threatened to overthrow the Continental Congress that brought about this meeting of 55 men in Philadelphia in 1787. It was the idea there that they would revise the Articles of the Confederation. But after they got there in Philadelphia, James Madison and some others decided that revising those articles would not be sufficient, so they wrote an entirely new document. It is a document that is a protectionist document. There is not a word in it that even remotely suggests the concept of free trade. And consequently, when we hear outfits like the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times and Business Week magazine, they're all against protection. They do not understand that the biggest responsibility, the primary responsibility of our government is to protect people who abide by our laws against people that don't.
But don't you think...
So we have three major publications that are doing just exactly the opposite.
But don't you really think it is because they do not believe in national sovereignty? I mean, after all, protection is to protect our sovereignty, to protect our people. We are a people, and we would like to remain as a sovereign nation. There are people, though, who have a different world vision, because, of course, they march to a different drumbeat. They dream a different dream. They do not believe in sovereignty, and that's really what the free trade scam is all about, is destroying the sovereignty, and by so destroying sovereignty, to destroy nationhood. And that's the only way in the world they're going to be able to unite the world under their control.
Well, a lot of people believe in the Wall Street Journal. They subscribe to it because they believe it's an informative paper, and they go along with whatever they see in it. I get it only to find out what these Benedict Arnolds are up to.
I want to know what the enemy is doing. And these people really are the enemy. I liked your term, a subversive, because this is really subversive.
Yeah, well, you know, back, it's been 10 or 12 years ago, Robert Bartley was the newly installed editor for the Wall Street Journal, and he promptly stated that the nation state is finished. And he was talking about the United States as being the nation state that's finished. And then after that, he did everything he could in his editorials and his news articles to make sure that the United States would go down the tube for the benefit of those who'd pick up all the pieces for a dime.
And I think it's so important that our listeners understand what Gus Stelzer is describing is exactly what's happening. The subversives control the media, they control our universities, they control our educational system,
right.
And of course, unfortunately, they have their agents planted at the highest levels of our government, negotiating treaties that will destroy the sovereignty of our nation and merge us into this new world order that they dream of.
Well, you know, I just mentioned that free trade didn't work at the beginning of our nation with the 13 colonies, and so that brought about the Constitution. If free trade had worked at that time, we wouldn't have a Constitution as we know it today. So the Constitution was written on the basis of the failure of free trade with the colonies and with England at that time. Then some years later, in 1944, Leaders of the United States met with their counterparts from the Allied nations near the end of World War II to put together a framework for global trade after the war ended. And as part of that, what is called the Bretton Woods Agreement, we agreed that our dollar would be the international currency and that we would support its fixed value by assuring 1 ounce of gold from our reserves for every $35 that foreign holders of our dollars wish to cash in. Well, after the war ended, West Germany and Japan, shortly after the war ended, they joined what became known as GATT, the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade. And the imports coming into this country increased rapidly each year, as did the export of our dollars to the foreign nations. And so by 1969, 1970, early 1971, we were flooding the world with our dollars in payment of the imports that we were buying, and to such a degree that the foreign holders of our dollars were cashing them in at such a rate that they threatened to wipe out our entire gold reserves. So on August 15th, 1971, President Nixon appeared on international television to say that we would no longer honor our pledge under the Bretton Woods Agreement. And then he said, and these were his exact words, he said, "Henceforth, the value of our currency will be determined by central banks and currency brokers." Now, that's exact words that President Nixon stated. In making that statement, President Nixon, perhaps unknowingly, also declared null and void two very important parts of the Constitution of the United States in Article 1, Section 8, which states that Congress has the duty to maintain the value of our currency versus foreign nations, and also to properly regulate trade with foreign nations in order to form a more perfect union, as stipulated in the preamble to our Constitution. So all of that in our Constitution went out the window on August 15, 1971, as a result of the failure of the Bretton Woods Agreement.
And so I think it's so important for our listeners to understand that it is the central banks of the world that determine the value of our currency, not our Congress, not even our own central bank, which is the Federal Reserve System, which is not federal and it has no reserves. It's a privately owned bank controlled by an elite, a banking fraternity that is, of course, is manipulating our economy and moving us towards total chaos. And that's where this is going to end up. And they know what they're doing. They just don't want the American people to know. The people, of course, who have pension funds or annuities or savings in the bank or bonds or anything tied to the dollar, who think that it's going to give them some security, not understanding that the best way to enslave people is to destroy their wealth. And then, of course, when they're impoverished, they'll always look to government for help.
Of course, that's why they're trying to get people like me to shut up.
And me, too.
And you, too. Yeah, but as long as I have any breath, I'm willing to say what's on my mind, because I know what I'm talking about is honest. And I might comment here to digress a little bit. I had a very unusual experience as a youngster. I attended a parochial school. I was promoted twice in the elementary grades, and I graduated from the elementary school at the age of 12. And this, again, was a parochial school where I learned the difference between right and wrong based on the Ten Commandments. The principal of the school came into our home because he had heard from my father. And I was one of six kids, and my father was out of work quite often. He tried to convince my father. He said, "Your son has an innate intelligence, and you should make sure that he goes on to the highest levels of education." My father said, "No, we can't afford to do that. He has to go to work." So after the principal left, I got with my father and said that if he was not willing to enroll me in a high school, that I would use some money that I had earned in two newspaper routes, and I was in the selling stamps to stamp collectors, and I put up $300 of my own money to as a tuition for the Missouri Business School. I lived in St. Louis at the time, in a course of 18 months for accounting and commercial law and business principles. I graduated from that 3 months.
Hold that thought right there, please.
What's that?
Go right ahead. Go right ahead with the story.
So I came out of that just a month before the crash of October 1929, and so I've already told you a little bit of the history that I've gone through after that. And so the point I'm making is that while I had a very limited academic education, I never went to high school, let alone college. I did have the benefit of having my conscience and my mind embedded with honorable principles, which became the foundation for my success with General Motors and every other endeavor that I've been involved in. And so when I see what's going on in our country, when these people like the Wall Street Journal and the Business Week and so on are undermining our country, they are doing it based on concepts that are absolutely immoral, unconstitutional. It's a shell game, and it's a fraud. And that's why we now have an $8.6 trillion federal debt in which we are rushing toward a national bankruptcy of our country. And from what David Walker, the Comptroller General, says, I believe that is what is going to happen. When we had this event occur in 1971, and the Bretton Woods Agreement having crashed, our federal debt then was only $400 billion. It took about 180-some-odd years to reach that point. And yet in the next 35 years, between 1971 and the current year of 2006, which is 35 years, in those 35 years, we've piled up $8.1 trillion of added federal debt. In 35 years, we've piled up 20 times more debt than in all of the 180-some-odd years preceding the crash of the Bretton Woods Agreement. And there's nothing going on in the current administration or from what I see in Congress that is going to change it. This thing is so far gone that there's nobody in political office that has got the willpower to do anything to put us on the right track. As I said, the crash of 29 occurred as it affected the stock investors. The next crash, as I said a moment ago, is going to be the crash of our country financially. But another point of that, having to do with the 1929 and 1930, and I was 14 years old when the crash occurred, so I lived through the entire 10 years, and I worked through all of that period of the Great Depression. We were still a civil society. We could walk the streets and the parks at night or any time of the day without fear of being assaulted. We were a monogamous nation, mostly of white people. Black people honored the laws of our country. And we all, most of them, had some reverence for a supreme being. And so it's a different atmosphere. But today, we are a balkanized country with about eight different ethnic groups from different parts of the world, each in their own little ethnic conclaves. And if we have another crash of the economy, everything is just going to break loose. They're all going to want their own individual little piece and their own voice, and they want part of the action, and they want to be protected. And it isn't going to be as nice and pretty as the crash and the Great Depression of the 1930s. So now what has happened here? We've had an $8.1 trillion increase since 1971.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment as we bring our other stations on board.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is August Stelzer, who was with, of course, General Motors for many, many years and is a senior executive, and he's simply talking about where we are headed as a nation and pointing out that in the 1930s when we had our crash, we were a unified nation. We were predominantly an Anglo-Saxon nation. There were about 10% of our population was blacks, but the black respected our laws. They were God-fearing people. And, of course, in that time, the black family was a very, very strong family. Of course, we've destroyed that thanks to the welfare system. We've certainly to the point where 70% of black children are born out of wedlock. And, of course, 25% of white children are born out of wedlock today. We are no longer a moral society. We are no longer a united society. We have become a multilingual, multicultural society. And this has all been done as part of a carefully conceived plan to destroy the integrity of this nation. this nation that was once of the land of the free. And the home of the brave is rapidly becoming the land of the depraved rather than the brave. And we everything is changing, and of course Gus Stelzer is very, very concerned that when this crash does going to come, and it's not a matter of if, it's when, and it's I believe it's drawing very, very close. They're not telling you what's really going on. They're not talking about the dollar really tumbling here in the last few days. They've held it up until through the elections, but everything is manipulated. Everything is for your perception to make you think everything's all right. So, well, sort of like the frog that's being boiled to death, you won't realize until it's too late what's happened. So you pick up the story there, Gus.
Well, to continue on with this thing we're talking about, as most of your listeners, I'm sure, are aware of the troubles that the traditional United States automobile companies, manufacturers like GM and Ford and Chrysler have been in. And I recently wrote an article which had a headline, The Great American Tragedy. And I wrote this in April of this year, based on my own experiences with General Motors. You know, most people and the outfits like the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times and Business Week magazine and our daily newspapers, whenever they have any commentary about General Motors or Ford, it's always somewhat on a critical basis that they created their own problems, that they made their own mess, and so they got to sleep in it. But it's 1,000% wrong, because the problems of General Motors and Ford were created by our own government, and they knew very well what they were doing. Let me give you just one example. I was still with GM in 1970. I was a senior executive of the company. I had 40,000 employees that I was responsible for. And at that time in 1970, as a result of a very, very weak Japanese yen, which took 360 yen to buy $1, and several prior strikes that went back to 1935 when the National Labor Relations Act was formed, legalizing strikes, the UAW brought another strike against General Motors, even though our costs were already five times higher than in Japan. And the federal government was subsidizing that strike by granting tax exemption on dues paid into strike funds, and they handed out over $15 million worth of food stamps so the strikers could hold out longer against management in order to get what they were demanding, a 35% increase in wages and benefits at a time that they were already five times higher than in Japan. And that's the year when the well-known health care and pension costs landed on General Motors, which have befuddled them and been on their backs ever since 1970. The government of the United States did that. And while they were doing that in cahoots with the United Automobile Workers and financing that strike, guess where our trade representatives were? They were in Tokyo, giving them carte blanche access into our country and bringing their cars into this country after paying only a 2% duty. They completely undermined what they had done in that particular strike. I'll give you another example. In 1966, I was a senior executive of GM, I got a call from my zone manager in Denver. My office and then was in Kansas City. My zone manager told me that a dealer in South Denver had been approached by Toyota to take on their franchise. So I went to Denver and met with my zone manager and got a little rundown on the operations of his dealership, and then the two of us called on the dealer. His name was Nate Burke. And after visiting a little bit and then making a tour of his facilities, I said to Mr. Burke, I said, Nate, you are so below our standards of a quality operation, including the lack of adequate facilities, that we have a right not to grant another contract to you.
Hold that thought right there, Ben, just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is Gus Stelzer, and you were just saying that you went to this man, this dealer, who was thinking of taking on Toyota, and you told him that his standards were so low you had a right not to renew his General Motors contract. Pick the story up there.
Okay, you want me to go on with that story?
Right along with it, right.
Okay, so I told Mr. Burt that we had no plans to not renew his contract, but that I wanted him to understand the situation that he was in the context of Toyota approaching them to take on their franchise. And so I said, Nate, if you want to take on Toyota, that's your prerogative, but it will not be in Chevrolet facilities, and it will not be in a utilization of any personnel in this current dealership who has been trained by General Motors. And we got a training center in Denver that trained most of the personnel working in General Motors dealerships. I said, if you want to take on Toyota, it'll be in a separate facility removed from your Chevrolet dealership. And if you so much as take one person that has been trained by General Motors out of this dealership and put it in your Toyota dealership, I said, I'm going to come down on you like a hawk on a June bug. Mr. Burt kind of smiled when I said that. And he said, well, I get the message, and I will so tell the Toyota people. 4 days later, I get a telephone call from a vice president of General Motors who says, he applauded me for the stand that I took, but then he said, the highest official in the federal government has forced us and you, meaning me, to allow Toyota to become a dealer in Chevrolet facilities right there after and totally overrule what I did. Out of the next 2,000 Japanese car franchises that came into this country, the vast majority of them rode piggyback on General Motors dealerships. Now, GM spent over 40 years at the cost of billions and billions of dollars and millions of man hours of personnel to develop the organization that we had. And I personally, as a result of my 30 years at that time in GM, played a significant part in building that organization. And now we had our own federal government turning our dealerships over to Toyota without one dime of compensation, and all Toyota had to do in the case of the Burke Chevrolet deal that I mentioned was to get an order from them for some parts, replacement parts, and some signs, and off they go, and they could ship new Toyota products to Nate Chevrolet, and from there on thousands of other General Motors dealers and Ford dealers. One of the ironic things about this whole thing, after they had gone through what I have just described...
I'm going to have to have you hold the story there for just a moment, please. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Gus was simply saying that after he had had a talk with the General Motors dealership that was thinking of taking on Toyota, now this is back about 1970, he let him know that, he could take on Toyota if he wanted to, but he couldn't use any of the personnel that had been trained by General Motors, and he couldn't do it in that facility. He could open up another facility, but he could not, certainly utilize the people General Motors had trained, to be servicing the Toyota cars. So it would be a separate dealership. And then, of course, suddenly a call comes from the highest levels of our government through the hierarchy of General Motors saying, no, you are to allow the Toyota dealerships, simply piggyback on the General Motors, dealerships. And suddenly here General Motors is being told by our government that they're going to have to allow the competition to come in. They're not only going to have to allow it, they're going to have to, for all intents and purposes, subsidize it, because they trained the people in these dealerships that helped establish the dictatorships and spent billions of dollars doing it. And now Toyota is welcome to come in and simply take over, these GM dealerships and piggyback on top. So about this time you were beginning to wonder what was happening, weren't you, Gus?
Yeah, well, later on, of course, Ford got involved in that same situation where the Japanese car line dealerships were riding piggyback on Ford dealerships, too. So...
But it was all because our government was forcing this. And what people don't understand is this was a long-range plan. And we actually have a four-tape set based upon a talk that was given in 1969. We call it the New Order of the Barbarians. It was given by the medical director of Planned Parenthood, but he was talking about not only what was happening in medicine and creating new diseases, because there were too many people in the world. He talked about automotive things and how we were going to do everything we could to encourage people to buy Japanese cars. 1969. It's all part of the same problem. A four-tape set is the New Order of the Barbarians. You will never look at the world through the same eyes after you've listened to that and realize that almost everything going on today was planned long ago. In fact, I heard today that some baseball player was going to get something like $44 million a year. $44 million a year, I think, is a pitcher. Pretty good pitcher. In 69, they were actually talking about exactly this. I mean, rather than rewarding scientists and physicians and brilliant scholars, they were going to raise the rates of athletes to just absurd levels. Everything going on today is planned. You need to hear the New Order of the Barbarians. Gus, please go ahead and pick up the story.
Well, you know, Stan, this thing that I just mentioned where our federal government forced General Motors to allow Japanese car dealers, particularly Toyota, that is comparable to the government stepping into your home. You're married to a lovely woman and you've got some kids, and the government says, we're going to take over the inside of your house. We're bringing in some people from South America, and they're going to eat off your table, they're going to raid your refrigerator, and they're going to alienate the affections of your wife. That's essentially what our government did to General Motors and to Ford. Essentially the same thing, and without one dime of compensation. You know, there's another aspect of this. I retired from GM in 1976, and 5 years later, I was then living in Rancho Santa Fe, California, and I became very concerned about the increasing percentage of California car buyers buying Japanese cars. So I went up to Los Angeles, about 100 miles north of Rancho Santa Fe, and I spent 2 days in their consulate office and in their JETRO, JETRO meaning their Japanese export, whatever that means. And I talked to many Japanese people about their government, their education system, their sales policies, and so on. And I left with a very thick book of an English version of the Japanese tax code. And when I got home, this book, by the way, was on onion skin paper, very thin. And it was almost blinded me to read this thing. And when I got up to about page 180, here I read where, contrary to the United States, which 91-some-odd% of the federal revenue came from the income taxes on individuals and corporations and the FICA, Social Security, Medicare tax, in Japan only about 65% of the federal revenue for Japan came from those three sources. The other 35% was a conglomeration of all kinds of consumption taxes, one of which was what they called a 220 commodity tax, as high as 30%. On automobiles and light trucks, they slapped a 22.5% commodity tax on them. So to put a few numbers together in a hurry here, suppose that Toyota built a car that had about an $8,200 normal dealer price tag, then they had to add another 22.5% commodity tax to please the Japanese government, raising the price to $10,000. But then the fine print in the book that I was reading said if they export the car to the United States, the federal government would kick back that commodity tax so they could sell the car in the United States for about $1,800 less than in their own country. Now, that's a violation of basic dumping laws in our international trade rules.
But we allowed them to do it.
We're not supposed to do that. They're not supposed to do that. So I wrote a 19-page article on it, and I sent it to then-Commerce Secretary Malcolm Baldrige, and also a copy and a letter to William E. Brock, who was then the trade representative, and I asked him if what I had described was essentially correct, and if I'm correct, what are you doing to change it and to stop this thing from going on? Well, I got a nice letter back from somebody by the name of M.R. Smith in the Commerce Department in behalf of Baldrige, and they said what I had written was essentially correct, and I got a confirmation of the same thing from the Los Angeles office of the Commerce Department. It said the same thing. And then they sent me about a 40-page brochure on how Zenith Television had filed a complaint against the same practice of rebating the commodity tax. And you bounced around for about 6 years from one U.S. court to another. And finally, at the end of 6 years, Zenith Television was out of business making television sets in the United States. And, of course, that was what was on the horizon in the auto industry. So I got a letter from Bill Block, 2 pages, solid words for 2 pages, the most disingenuous rhetoric you have ever mentioned. It was obvious that his allegiance was not to the United States, it was to Japan. And I wrote back to him and refuted every word that he said, and I offered him the opportunity to come back to me with his own excuse to refute whatever I said about him. About over 2 months went by, and I didn't hear from him, and finally I got a letter from a man by the name of D. Kiefer, his legal counsel, that said, "Mr. Brock has no intention of responding to you." So I sent the entire file on this thing to a man by the name of Jim McDonald, who was then the president of General Motors, and I had worked very closely with him right before I retired from GM, and he was aghast at what was going on, and he put a vice president in charge of government affairs on the job in Washington, D.C., to get this thing changed. And for about 6 months, we had telephone calls and correspondence going back and forth that looked like we were going through some, making some progress. And then one day I get a 3-line letter from McDonald saying that all further negotiations with Washington have been stopped. I couldn't understand the letter, but about 3 days later I get a telephone call from him. Asked me if I read the letter, and I said, "Yeah, I don't understand it." And then McDonald says, "That's why I'm calling you." He said, "The highest authority in the government at that time was none other than Ronald Reagan. Had put a stop to any further pursuit of this concept, that we are not going to interfere in the policies of Japan. We are making foreign policy, not General Motors, so bug off." That was the word that we got.
And what we were actively doing was actually doing everything we could to encourage the trade there and create the industrialization of Japan. And we were doing the same thing with Germany and lowering our levels. The whole idea is they really want, of course, to have everybody the same. Every country will have eventually exactly the same economic standards and the same amount of poverty. We're not sharing the wealth. We're going to share the poverty. But the average person does not see how this is happening. And even today in Japan, where, of course, they produce their cars for so long, now they're beginning to ship their production to China. They're actually opening plants here in the United States because the labor standards are much lower here today than they were than they are in Japan. Now, at one time, they were much higher in Japan. Did you see the value of the currency has increased so much? And in those days, it was about 350 yen to the dollar. Now it's about 100 yen to the dollar. And the value of the dollar is beginning to fall even more. And before long, we'll be able to produce things here because we can produce them almost as cheaply as in China because our living standards will be about the same.
Well, you know, Stan, there's another facet to this thing that Ronald Reagan was involved in where he refused to support American industry in this matter of dumping that I just described. But as I stated in another example where the federal government was subsidizing prior strikes, like the one in 1917, where they handed out millions of food stamp dollars to support the union efforts for higher wages and so on. In 1982, latter part of 1982, Reagan had been in office in almost 2 years. He passed the word on to several Japanese car manufacturers that as the President of the United States, he would no longer be involved in any form of government subsidization of UAW strikes against the auto industry. And that was a word primarily to Toyota, that if they wished to open up plants in the United States, the federal government would not subsidize any effort by the UAW to force Toyota or any other Japanese manufacturer from abiding by our labor laws. And so that gave Toyota and many others, as well as some of the Korea, they opened up plants in the United States without going through the process of unionization. And so none of these foreign-owned factories operate with union labor. And their labor costs in the United States are about 35 to 40% less than the labor costs of the United States, which are still bound by the contracts that were negotiated and agreed upon while the government was still subsidizing the strikes with tax exemptions and with kicking back food stamps.
In other words, what we're doing is basically is doing everything we can to help the Japanese industries while we have done everything we could to hurt the American industries. It really doesn't make sense from a logical point of view. And if you understand, it's not supposed to make sense because the officials who are doing this, and including Ronald Reagan, who was a globalist, contrary to what most people think, he had a much different allegiance. Of course, we believe what we've been told over and over and over again. Most people don't know that, of course, Ronald Reagan was deeply involved with astrology. In fact, Nancy Reagan's astrologer, Joan Quigley, wrote a book entitled What Did Joan Say? And that's what the president would say every time Nancy had gone to see Joan Quigley, astrology, for advice, and the president would want to know what was next. In fact, Joan Quigley said, in no administration going all the way back to ancient Rome has astrology played such an important part in governmental affairs as it did in the Reagan administration. There's not one in 100,000 Americans who knows that.
Stan, if you don't mind, let me put in a little plug here if any of your listeners are interested. The original book that I wrote, as I said, sold out in 1998. And at the time, I was almost exhausted from trying to sell 50,000 copies of the book all by myself. I was given talks all over the country on radio talk shows, including some of yours, Dr. Stan.
You sure did.
And you helped to sell part of those 50,000 books, and 10,000 books, and get me off of the hook for $50,000 that I had invested in it. And so I decided not to do anything. I had three publishers wanted me to do an update on it, and I was just bushed. I was worn out. But about a year ago, an enterprising newspaper in Kalamazoo, Michigan, along with a bookbinding company, got together, and they wanted to put out a little soft cover version. And I wrote about a 12-page introductory to it, and they have produced it. And it has a cover on it just like the hardcover version, very beautiful, red, white, and blue. And whereas the hard copy had a list price of something like, as I remember, $29.95, they've got a list price of about $19.95 on the soft cover version, which is exactly the same copy as the hard copy version, plus the extra 12 pages. And
how can people get it?
I can arrange anybody that is interested in it, and they want to call me at my home phone number, and I'll pay for the call. And that number, if they want to jot it down, is 425-337-4588. It's 425-337-4588. I'll pay for the call. Tell the operator it's a collect call and let me know it's a collect call, and I'll be glad to take the call. And I would arrange to send you a copy of this book now in the soft cover version, plus the 12 pages of introduction. And not only is this book, it has What everything that I projected and said would happen in that book 12 years ago has happened. I'll give you just an example. The dust jacket in the original version said that the federal debt at that time was $4.5 trillion. It took 154 years to reach $4.5 trillion by our federal government. 154 years. Guess what happened in the next 12 and a half years up to 2002? The federal debt went up another, 4.2 trillion dollars, and the federal debt is now 8.6 trillion dollars instead of 4.5 trillion. So because the federal government and the people of the United States did not honor the principles that I set forth in that book, we now have a nation that is the federal government that's on the verge of bankruptcy. In 1970, when we had to go off the gold standard and on the Bretton Woods agreement, since that time, we have had $8.1 trillion in added federal debt, and there's no signs that it's going to abate in any way. As a matter of fact, in just the first 6 years of President Bush's term, our trade deficits increased another $3 trillion, and the federal debt increased to $3 trillion.
Well, the book is called The Nightmare of Camelot. I've read it. It's an excellent book. I recommend it to our listeners, and if you'd like to, then you give Gus Delzer a call. What's that number one more time?
What number?
Your telephone number.
425-337-4588.
Hold that.
And by the way, the book not only covers
Right,
but it covers monetary policies, it covers immigration, it covers many other subjects having to do with the economy of our country. And about a week ago, I had a call from someone in Michigan. I wanted to talk about this little soft cover version, and they said that they had just read it, and they said it was absolutely brilliant. And so then I had a call from a local reporter on here in the Seattle area that he wanted to hold an interview with me for the purpose of putting it in the local paper. And so I said, well, let's read the soft cover version of the book. And so in order for me to be prepared for this interview with the reporter, I decided to read a few pages out of that book. And I have to tell you, Stan, I couldn't believe I wrote that book. I mean, as I went through it, I couldn't believe that I was that smart that I could write anything like this. And everything that I wrote in that book has turned out to be true. And here we are today in a federal debt that's on the verge of putting the United States into bankruptcy. It's, it's almost unbelievable. You know, I've said on a number of occasions that after the 13 colonies, they had written the Constitution, and one statement on it was that they were to regulate trade and in order to form a more perfect union. The very first Congress in 1789 adopted what they called the tariff system. And for the next, as I remember, 120, 124 years, they maintained that tariff system, and so they applied tariffs on imports to equalize the difference between costs in the United States and the cost of the import, so as to maintain a level playing field with the imported product and also to provide some revenue for the government. And during that 120-some-odd years, the tariffs on imports provided as much as 85% of the revenue to operate the federal government, and we didn't have an income tax at any time in those years except for a couple of years during the Civil War when Abe Lincoln was forced to do it in order to pursue that particular war. But in 1913 then, as we all know, they decided to put tariffs on our own products, and they called it an income tax.
Well, hey, we're out of time, Gus. Thank you so much. I hope I can get you on my other programs real soon.
Yeah,
it's always a pleasure. Maybe we get you on for 2 hours next time. God bless you. Thanks
well,
very much.
Right now, I got to tell you, I'm almost worn out. You have to remember that I'm 91 years old.
You sound pretty good.
Yeah, okay.
Good night. God bless. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I hope you enjoyed our interview with Gus Delzer, who's 91 years old. You'd never think of it. You never know it listening to him talk. He doesn't sound a bit different than he did a decade ago when we first started interviewing him, but he's absolutely right. There are subversive elements in our society. Of course, it's very difficult when they control the reins of government to call it treason, but that's exactly what it is, because these are people who've sworn to uphold our Constitution, But they don't believe in our Constitution. They do not believe in national sovereignty. They're intent upon destroying this country. And you only have to look and see how they're refusing to enforce our immigration laws, how they have a policy of people being caught coming in from foreign nations, from terrorist nations, you know, a catch and release. We catch you and then we release you, but you will come back in a month for a hearing, won't you, for a deportation hearing. And you know what? Why almost nobody ever comes back. I wonder why. Ladies and gentlemen, most of what you think you know just is not true. The war in the Middle East is being fought not to bring democracy to the Middle East. What we've established over in Iraq, if you've read their constitution, is an Islamic dictatorship. Everything is under Sharia law. If you have freedom of speech, as long as it corresponds to Islamic law, to Sharia law, you have freedom of assembly, as long as it corresponds to Islamic law. And if you understand what they've done, we've established an Islamic dictatorship in what was once a secular dictatorship. That's the only difference. The Christians have fled the country, and you know the chaos that's going on there today. This has not happened by accident. It is a wonderful diversion, and as our men fight for freedom overseas, why we lose our freedom here at home. Well, you really, of course, you would like more information on what we're talking about, why you need to get my tape series. Actually, it's a video and a syllabus titled Iraq, the Untold Story. It will explain to you what's really going on in Iraq today. If you want to understand really what so much of what Gus is talking about, this was all predicted back in 1969, you need to get the 4-tape set, and you can actually get a transcript of this. It's called The New Order of the Barbarians. The New Order of the Barbarians. And then, of course, we do hope that many of you out there will want to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, to understand that there actually are spiritual forces behind what's going on today. There really is a spiritual dimension in the world. People have wondered how you could have UFOs, for instance, you know, that we could go 5,000 miles an hour and then make a right turn. Without, of course, having to, you know, make a curved turn. No, just a direct right turn. You can't do that, not if you're from this dimension. But there is a spiritual dimension. There has always been a battle between God and Satan, and this is in the supernatural realm. And until you understand that we are truly involved in a spiritual battle, and that many of the people who are betraying America today do so because they are involved with a different God. There really is another God. Of course, it's Lucifer, the Prince of Darkness, and he's working right here in the world, and he intends to bring about a one-world order and a new world religion. That is what it's all about. That's why they took prayer and the Ten Commandments and mention of God out of our schools. And if you read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, we'll tell you exactly why they did it and who did it and what energized them. And we'll document this for you when I believe many people have read that book, and they have never looked at the world through the same eyes again. You can get, of course, the story on DVD. You can get it on VHS. You can get an audio tape. You can get the Brotherhood of Darkness special with a book, either the DVD or video and or the tape together. And then, of course, you need to get some of our other material. Our videos or DVDs, they sold their souls for rock and roll. The 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version. You need to get this, and you need to watch it, and you need to get other people to watch it to begin to understand the true nature of the enemy we face today. And then, of course, we hope that many of you will want to get the other items we have, and we hope many of you will join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and help us. Quite frankly, we do need your help to continue doing what we're doing. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927, and then please pray for America and pray for Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the central coast of California at 464-8295, but at least please hold your calls temporarily till we ask for them, because right now we have on the line Bob Chapman from the International Forecaster, and we've asked him to be on here because we are moving into some very, very difficult times. The dollar, which has been artificially propped up by the other central banks of the world, and we're totally dependent upon other banks throughout the world to maintain the stability of our economy. We're having to borrow over $3 billion a day just to maintain, pay the bills that we have. Otherwise, it would have to monetize everything and even more undermine the value of our currency. We're losing about between 10 and 12% of the value of our currency every single year because of inflation. Our unemployment is not a 3 or 4% as we're told, but it's probably two or three times that. We're being lied to at every turn. Certainly our industries are leaving this country. Certainly the only thing we're producing planes, of course, but it won't be long before Boeing and certainly Airbus are both over in China producing their planes over there. The Chinese certainly are gearing up to begin producing their own planes in competition using our technology, which, of course, we're so kind to give them. But what we're seeing is the transfer of America's manufacturing base, the transfer of America's jobs, the transfer of Americans' wealth out of this country as part of a planned program to lower the living standards of the middle class. And when you tell people that, they look at you, and of course, they really don't want to believe it. They can't believe it. Why would this happen? It doesn't make any sense. But of course, if you believe that this is a spiritual battle, it makes a lot of sense, because there's no instance in all history where a nation is turned against God, where God has not eventually brought horrible retaliation on that society. And with that as the background, Bob Chapman, how are you doing?
Well, I'm doing pretty good.
All right, tell us your take on what's going on today.
Well, I think the overall view is that the world economy is in trouble, and it's in trouble for the reasons that you mentioned, and that is it's being deliberately put into harm's way or into trouble. I do think that the people who plan this, which I call elitists, for lack of a better term, I think that they are trying to neutralize what they've started. The plan for world depression went into gear in the year 2000, and they expected that in the Middle East that their endeavors would have been very successful, and that has not been the case. In fact, they're going to have to pull out of there. At least that's my opinion. And I think that they are not prepared for recession, depression, like they had planned, and they're trying to pull it back from the brink, and they can't do that. Their point of no return was back in 2000-2001. And I don't see them being able to restore the kind of stability that normally involves an economy or a world economy.
All right, fine. You hang on there, Bob. We'll be back in just a moment. Our guest this evening is Bob Chapman from the International Forecaster, and we're going to get his views of what's going on the world today. Now, right, Bob, of course, you were saying that you think that, you know, had they let this thing go into a recession back in 2000, 2001, why, of course, you know, that we ordinarily have gone through economic cycles. This is what a capitalist society does, or at least a society based upon, you know, the principles as ours has, and it's gone through cycles and always recover. But here, of course, they put off and put off, put off the time when they would have a recession, to a point where, you know, we could no longer have a soft landing. Would that be pretty much your impression?
I think that's a generalization of what we have coming. You have budget deficits that are over $600 billion if you put the proper figures together. And that's cash accounting. If you go to accrual accounting, the current debt is not $8.6 trillion, it's over $70 trillion. And I think the government's going to be forced to go to accrual accounting in the not too far distant future. We have a current account deficit of 7% of GDP, and we have free trade and globalization, which is wiping out jobs by the hundreds of thousands every year for the last 6 years. And of course, that began back in the early 80s, but very slowly. And we really didn't see the giant losses that we have in the last 6 years.
Okay, fine. So basically, of course, what we're talking about is the fact that this difference in accounting, and certainly we're, the federal government is requiring the corporations and industry to go to a proper type of recording.
Legally. And they take jobs away from people at the lower end of the economic ladder. And that leads people who are in that situation to turn to crime. And then we have real estate, which has, for the last year and a half, been in a recession. And that's going to get worse. And building made up 35% of the growth of the GDP over the last 4 years. And that means a lot of people are going to get laid off, hundreds of thousands, millions. It also means that the building companies are going to lose money. And the upshot of all of that is that that continues to put pressure on the dollar, because the Federal Reserve, which does our monetary policy, they continue to create money and credit at about 11% rate annual for the last 6 years, 5 years actually.
Hold that thought. We're going to be right back here in just a moment.
Sure.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Bob Chapman, the international forecaster, and he's talking about, of course, all the things that are coming together, and certainly one of them is the contracting housing market. And we've had a great bubble. I mean, this is the greatest housing run-up in all history. Well, maybe we might say what had happened in Japan has certainly exceeded that, but certainly I think the greatest run-up here in the United States we've ever seen. And now, of course, you know, whatever goes up has to come down, because there's no value behind these inflated prices. And although there's a great deal of money out there, they're creating a psychology. This thing is beginning to contract. Houses are not selling in a few places. The prices have actually started to come down. They're having to give incentives. But there's so many houses for sale and so relatively few buyers. And they've actually lowered the interest rates to try to keep people buying. And even as they've lowered the long-term interest rates, which of course puts the long-term interest rates, you know, at a lower rate than the short-term interest rates, the inverse ratio?
Inverted yield curve.
Inverted yield curve. That apparently is almost always a prelude to a recession or depression. Is that right?
That's correct, and it's the strongest of all indicators. And the Fed is desperately trying to keep the system afloat, and there's two ways that they're doing it. They are buying long-term paper in the market, trying to drive the yield down on the U.S. 10-year note, and the reason for that is that the mortgage rates are based upon the yield on that note each week, and which we publish in the International Forecaster. And so that would tend to make houses somewhat more affordable. On the other hand, in doing that, they upset our lenders. Now, our lenders are all those people out there who are in foreign countries who have dollars and people who must invest them and do something with them. And so these people are looking aghast at this and saying, goodness gracious, they shouldn't be doing that because the dollar is going to weaken. And we hold all these dollars. China has about 700 million and Japan has about 750 billion and on and on and on. And what they should be doing is raising interest rates, not lowering them. And so what's happening right now is we're having a weakening of the dollar, and I don't think that the Fed dares bring interest rates down on an official basis, which would be the Fed funds rate, which is 5.25%, at least for another year. And all those in the stock market who think they're going to see lower interest rates from the Fed are mistaken. There's tremendous amount of manipulation going on in the markets by the U.S. Treasury and the Federal Reserve. The U.S. Treasury does it through the Exchange Stabilization Fund, and the group is called the Working Group on Financial Markets, and it's legal. The only thing is it was designed for emergencies, not to manipulate markets 24 hours a day all over the world. And so you have all of these things conflicting together. At the same time, we have inflation. They tell us it's around 3.4 or 3.8%, when in fact it's been over 10% for the last 5 years. And as I said earlier, they're creating money and credit at 11%. And if you add in the other sources of the creation of money, or credit in particular, you're looking at 14%. And if you switch over to Europe, they're increasing money and credit overall, all the EU countries, at a rate of about 8.5%, not counting other entities that can create credit. And some nations, like England, is increasing their money and credit by 14.5%.
Now, of course, this creates a tremendous prosperity, at least an appearance of prosperity, but in the process of so doing, it actually, of course, destroys the value of the currency. Would that be a fair statement?
That's right, and that's why eventually there'll be a 35 to 50% correction in the value of the dollar. And people who are holding dollar-denominated assets who come from another country, they're going to be losing a lot of money.
And that's why, of course,
I know that Japan has had a deal with the United States ever since the end of the Second World War. And that is, the U.S. tells them what to do. And I won't get into all the details of that, but take my word for it.
We occupy, our troops are over there occupying Japan. I mean, anybody thinks that, I mean, this is a free country, already must be very naive. We control Japan just as we control Germany. Our troops are in both those nations. They've been there for 60 years, and he who has troops in another man's nation controls that nation.
Well, we should be out of there.
Sure, we should.
We should have left, at least in Europe, when the wall came down and communism, Soviet Union came to an end. So you can see what their intentions really are. And in Japan, we should have been out of there a long time ago. With China, I believe a secret deal has been made, and the Chinese know they're going to take a haircut on their investment, but they don't care. They put millions of people to work, and they built themselves into an industrial and military power. And they also have put American markets on its knee, on their knees, so that Americans either have to bring down their cost of labor or they have to continue import. Well, the problem is they don't have the credit to import once those people supplying credit decide not to do so. Paul Volcker said just recently this just can't go on. I mean, one of these days, the central banks, if nobody else, are going to say, enough, we can't do it anymore. And so if you put all of that together, and that, those are just general problems without going into the details, it's like a dog's breakfast. It is awful. Hello?
And my concern is, Bob, we're antagonizing governments throughout the world, and if everybody, of course, supporting America, and we were good guys, and of course, they felt we were really interested in creating peace throughout and stability, it would be one thing. But it's very obvious to all of these other countries that everything is being manipulated, and we're managing to antagonize Europe, and we're managing to antagonize, you know, people in other countries with our what we're doing in certainly in the Middle East today, and really almost our bully tactics with other countries. And if they certainly become disillusioned and they say we're not going to support America anymore, and the central banks throughout the world can stop financing us, then what happens?
Well, the central banks would be nominal sellers of dollars, and that would drive the dollar down. The dollar is around 83.5 right now on the dollar index. The dollar index is seven major currencies stacked up against the dollar. 50% of that goes to the euro and 20% to the pound, and there's other currencies involved. And 80, or just under 80, is where the support level is on the dollar, and it's been a very long-term support level. And if that's broken, there's going to be real trouble, and it will be broken.
So you feel that really, of course, it won't be very long before the dollar loses a great deal of its value as far as the rest of the currencies, and really so many of the things we get today we're buying from other countries. If a dollar falls in value and the other countries do not follow along, why, of course, then all these wonderful things we're importing from other countries are going to be a lot more expensive, aren't they?
They surely are, and it's going to send inflation through the roof. It's also going to put a lot of Americans out of work because that'll cause a recession. You see, they're stuck. They want to lower interest rates and continue to increase money and credit to keep the system alive. Now, if they do that, or if they in turn as well increase the amount of money available, you're going to see a tremendous pressure take place. And then also, with the dollar falling on the other side, they're going to have it going both ways. Because if they lower rates and increase money supply and moderate the economy so it doesn't go into a recession, the dollar's going to collapse. And when the dollar collapses, the economy has to collapse. It's as simple as that. So no matter which way it happens, that's the way it's going to be. And there's absolutely no way out of it.
Well, because some people would say if the dollar falls, why then our goods become more competitive on the world market. In other words, certainly they would be far more competitive if the dollar was worth 50 cents than it was worth a dollar. How would you respond to that?
What exports?
Well, of course, we certainly are doing some exports. They tell us that they were doing exports.
Well, there's
really
Boeing airplanes and Caterpillar tractors and a few other things. We only export about 10% of our GDP. Some people talk in terms of 13 to 14%. That's down from 29% 25 years ago. And we are being hollowed out from a manufacturing viewpoint.
At one time, we sort of did half of the manufacturing in the world, and today, well, we're only a small fraction of it.
That's right. So they just have services. And you know, it's not going to help that much having the dollar go down 35 to 50%. It'll be helpful, but it'll be marginally helpful.
And it'll impoverish our people. That'll be the problem. We'll be back in just a moment here with Bob Chapman. We'll welcome your calls from out across America, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Okay, Bob, pick the story up there.
Well, you know, it's interesting. We're graduating about 70,000 technical engineering people every year. And China and India, now this is a guess because I wrote the figure, it's in the last issue, and I can't remember every number, but it was like 700,000. So they're producing 10 times more engineers of one form or another than we are. And those people are making about 15 to 20% of what our starting or existing engineers in all those different fields are making. We simply cannot compete. Now, since this nation started, we've always had tariffs and imposts and duties. And starting in 1962 at GATT, General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade, which turned into the WTO in 1986, I think it was, we changed that, and we started to lower our tariffs, and now most of them are gone. And that means in a society like ours, where, let's say the average is making $50,000 a year, because we now have what is called free trade and globalization, and there's nothing free about it. Because of that, we just simply can't compete. And it is guaranteed to destroy our nation. And the only people I hear talk about it in the political venue are Democrats, because they see how many people are losing jobs, and they know why. And I think there will be some changes coming. I know that there's a group going to China this coming week, and that includes Mr. Paulson, the Secretary of the Treasury, and Mr. Bernanke, who's the head of the Fed, and a number of others in government, to impress the Chinese and tell them you have to revalue your currency. You have to make it go up in value 20 or 30%. And the Chinese are going to tell them to take a hike. It's as simple as that. They're going to do what they want to do.
In other words, we've really, in some respects, created a monster over there because, of course, you know, basically, if we were in a position of power, we would tell them to come here. Instead of telling them to come here, we go over there with hat in hand saying, this is what you got to do. And what happens if China says, we're not going to do it? Are we going to, of course, put
There's nothing we can do. Because we've stripped our nation of our factories. We would have to start over again. And the only thing that Congress could do, and that has been proposed previously and the bill was withdrawn, because it was a dummy bill, I just put it up there to keep people happy, is to put a 27.5% or a 35% duty on Chinese goods. And how it works is this. Booms make it made in America, all the booms together cost a dollar to make. They're made in China as well, in other places, for a total of 10 cents. So we have a 90% tariff on those brooms so that they will sell for the same price as our brooms.
And hold that thought. We're going to be back in just a moment here, Bob, sure, as we bring our other stations on board right here at Radio Liberty. So we'll be back in just a moment to evaluate the brooms. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Bob Chapman. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And Bob is saying that what we really need, of course, is to have an import tariff on Japanese goods, probably 27.5% at least, so that we'd have a level playing field. But there's no way American workers in this country can compete in producing goods with people in China who will work for, you know, $2 or $3 a day. It just can't be done unless. And the only way to really be competitive would be lower our living standards or our wage scales down to $4 or $5 a day. And, of course, if we're going to do that, we're going to destroy the nation. That's why we need tariffs to protect our workers and our industry, right?
Well, what's very disturbing is that I am the only newsletter writer who advocates tariffs. All of these writers, and most of them are middle of the road to conservative, they think that's some sort of blasphemy in a capitalist economy. Well, let's stop for a minute. Our economy has always used tariffs from its very beginnings. And they learned that from the British, because the British not only had tariffs, they had unreasonable tariffs, especially on tea. And you know what that led to. So maybe it won't be a tea party. Maybe it will be a broom party. And maybe the Chinese will get broomed out. But that's where we're headed. And if we don't do that, and, you know, mark my words, we will be destroyed economically. The damage is already ferocious.
But don't you think
if we let it go another 5 years, it's over.
But at first, Bob, don't you really believe that there really are people here in our society who really want to destroy this nation? I mean, some of these people really have an intense hatred for America because it was a Christian nation. And they would do everything they can to destroy this nation. By so destroying our nation, then, of course, they can control the people. If we impoverish the people when they're hungry and homeless, why, or just struggling to keep their home from being taken away from them, they'll do almost anything. They certainly would never object to the imposition of tyranny here or the destruction of national sovereignty. After all, freedom is a very, very, a nice thing to have. But when you're hungry and you've got a choice between being freedom and hungry, be free or hungry, I wonder how many Americans would choose freedom.
They'll choose being able to eat. They'll choose safety. And that's the mode they're in already, incidentally. And whether when they're pushed to the brink, they'll react remains to be seen. But they're not reacting yet. They think everything's going to be okay, and maybe the fall in the real estate market, which has only really just begun, even though it's been going on for a year and a half, and we picked the top of the market again, just like we did in the stock market. We get everybody out who wanted to get out. And now, for the last 6 years, we've been recommending gold and silver investments, and people have made phenomenal amounts of money. And it hasn't even started yet. And so, America, you got to wake up. Because if you don't wake up, you'll end up penniless. And you may not believe me, but if I were you, I'd listen. I've been doing this for 48 years, and I did learn a few things along the way.
I'm sure you have. All our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, and I really feel that it's only a matter of time before we really see the economy begin to contract. We see the industries that we have. Certainly we know that our automotive industry is leaving America. Actually, of course, it's this coming year when China is going to begin to introduce their low-cost cars here, and they'll undercut anything we have here in the United States. I don't know what they're going to look like or how efficient they'll be, but they're sure going to be cheap. They're going to be able to bring cars in here, $7,000 or $8,000, $9,000.
Well, the Chinese are going to do 300,000 next year, and the following year they'll do a million. And this will be under the GM label. And the year after that, there won't be any GM production left in the United States, no parts and all the other things that go along with it. All of it will be gone. And General Motors will sell their brand name. And the Chinese will build the cars. And the Fords are going to be, if they're still in business, they just staked all of their assets for an $18 billion loan, and if this doesn't work for them, they're going down. But they're going to be producing in Mexico and in India. And so that's where all of our jobs are headed, and the corporate giants are all involved in this. They're involved in the Council on Foreign Relations.
Hold that thought. Hold that. We'll be right back.
Sure.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Bob Chapman, and of course he was just talking about how, of course, Ford has staked everything they have on this $18 billion loan. If it doesn't work out and they're not able to be productive as far as they're building their cars in India and in Mexico, why Ford Motor Company, once, of course, one of the giants here in America, will become a remembrance of things past, and it's not going to be producing things in America. Ford is moving its production facilities out of the country, as is General Motors. Now, Bob, certainly as far as General Motors is concerned, we hear on one hand it has these massive debts. Does it have enough assets, you know, to cover all the debts that it has?
No. And they're in the same position. They're both on the edge of bankruptcy. I'd say they're both about a year and a half away. And Ford is probably the weaker of the two. From a financial viewpoint, but they're going down. I've had subscribers who wanted to short General Motors for a long time, and we're short all the building stocks, you know, from 2 years ago. People have made phenomenal money on the short side of the market. For those people for which it's suitable, for those people who can handle betting the market's going to go down rather than up. But American industry is through. And America is through if we don't stop them. You know, I was watching a debate today on CNBC, and this Kudlow, who is a neocon, he's an economist supposedly, and Barney Frank, of all people, he had Barney on, and they were talking about Social Security. And Barney says, so, you know, you want to change it, and you also want people to be able to have 401k type of investments rather than Social Security. He said, but these people don't have any money to save. If you don't have higher wages, how are these people going to invest in anything? He said, people like you just don't get it. And I'm sorry, I got to agree with Barney Frank, who's a screaming liberal and leads a strange lifestyle, but he's right. And, you know, your enemy's enemy is your friend, and it doesn't matter to a great extent who the party is that's saying the proper thing, that's telling the truth. When they're doing that, you join them. It's not a party thing, it's a human thing.
All right, hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment with Bob Chapman. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Bob Chapman of the International Forecaster. Bob, before we go on, I want you to get your telephone number out. I want you to get your, certainly tell people how they can get your material. And, of course, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And Bob was simply saying that there was a recent debate or discussion on television where they had, of all people, Barney Frank along with a neocon economist, and the neocon economist wanted to, of course, try to straighten out Social Security and get people investing into, 401ks and these other things, for their pensions. And as Barney Frank said, even though we may not like Barney Frank, but how are people going to have the money to buy, if they're not making an adequate salary? I mean, people are just having enough really to survive now. You can talk all you want to about economics and about certainly, investing in 401ks, but if you don't have any money, how are you going to invest? So you go ahead and then get your telephone number out, and then we'll go to Tom in Florida.
Okay, I want to say one thing. They want to increase the amount of Social Security that can be taken out from $94,200 to $150,000, and they want to cut back the payout. And all they want to do is get the revenue, the cash flow. They're not going to save anything. They're just going to put it to the public. So I had to tell you that. It's in tomorrow's issue. Do you want me to give them the phone number now?
Yes. Go right ahead. I want you to get
the toll-free number to receive either in hard copy or by email. The International Forecaster, and that number is 800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. 888. And if you'd like to visit our site on the Internet, that address is international, excuse me, theinternationalforecaster.com. Theinternationalforecaster.com.
All right, that's theinternationalforecaster.com. Let's go to Tom, who's calling us from, is that for Tom from Florida?
Yes.
All right, do you have a question for our guest?
Bob, how long do you think that the Social Security is going to happen, or are they going to cut that off?
Well, I think it depends upon the economic climate. First of all, there's no money in Social Security. There's a bunch of bonds sitting there that are non-negotiable that don't mean anything.
Where's the money coming from that people are getting now?
All that money goes into the general fund, and it gets spent. Now, that's been going on since 1935. FDR spent it, and everybody else since, as the president, has done the same thing. So there is no money there.
One question before I go is I'd like to say, Bob, you know what's going on really good, and how long do you think it'll be, just a guesstimation, how long the word neighbor will take on an entirely different meaning? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
When it falls apart.
I think that we have to go into recession first, and that has to be followed by depression, and that evolutionary process will take the next 3 or 4 years.
When's the recession coming, Bob?
Well, I think it's already begun. I think it began in January at the top of the market.
Will the depression be shortly behind it?
I think it'll take a while. It all depends on what they do.
Yeah.
If they lower interest rates and the dollar collapses, they might have a 6 month to a year hiatus where they're able to gain some time, which they've been very good at doing since 1990. Because if they had taken and bitten the bullet then, we wouldn't have the problems we got today, but they had no intention of doing that because they wanted to build it up so they could automatically collapse it when they wanted to. And that's what we're going through now, and they're trying to stop it, and they can't.
Well, thank you very much, Bob, and Dr. Stan for being there. Thank you.
You're more than welcome. And, of course, Tom is asking where the money that we're putting out now is coming from. It's coming from other money that's coming in. In other words, people are not drawing their Social Security. They're paying in with the idea that money's being put away in their account. Ladies and gentlemen, there is no account. There is no money in the Social Security Fund. It's simply an IOU from a government that hasn't any money. In fact, it's the most incredible thing that it is a Ponzi scheme. If anybody else tried to do something like that, you'd put them in prison. Here, of course, our politicians do that. They get a big fat pension. They get free medical care. They get all sorts of benefits. They get all sorts of perks. They get all sorts of prestige for a crooked scheme. Social Security is a Ponzi scheme. The money that comes in is paid out, and actually there's more money coming in that's being paid out at the present time. But of course, starting again in about a year to 2 years, when the baby boomers begin to take early retirement, at that point, you're going to have more going out than is coming in. And then, of course, when we begin getting into more problems, then what do? When you got more going out than's coming in, and you don't have any reserves? That's when the squeeze comes.
It'll probably happen in about 4 or 5 years.
Right.
But it's really hard to nail it down. But it's a process that's going to have to happen just from a demographic point of view.
All right. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Let's see. Tommy, are you still there? All right, we lost Tom. Our telephone number again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. Bob, in your estimation, and remember, of course, I'm not a financial analyst, and Bob has got a lot of a historical background behind him, but right now we're just trying to share our thoughts with you. What's going to happen to the stock market? Right now it's doing great. And because, as they tell us, it's based upon the great profits our corporations are making. But what's the relationship? What's the price-earnings ratio for those stocks? Are they really properly valued, or are they way inflated?
Well, the P.E. ratio, which is trailing, is around 21%. And historically, it's been around 14.5 to 15.5. So let's say 15%. So it's overvalued, but it's based upon double-digit earnings increases, and we have had those for the last we'll say 4 years. And I don't think that they're going to be there this coming year, 2007. My estimate is that earnings will increase 4 to 5%. And if I'm right, then if the stock market is based upon earnings, then I would think that probably the stock market would go down. Now, there's other factors that influence the market, and the value of the dollar, and lots of psychological factors. And today, unfortunately, our government is interceding in the market, and you can see them doing it. I mean, I was a trader for 25 years, and I know that certain things don't happen, and these things that don't happen frequently, or have for the last several years, with no explanation. You can't even use charts anymore because of the manipulation that's involved. And so I believe that the market is going down. They will do everything they can to keep it from being steep. But if the dollar collapses, then I think the market on a Dow Jones basis could drop 50%. Don't forget, it was at 786, and now 7,286. It recently was around 12,400. It's a little over 12,100 today. So a 50% loss would probably, if they're lucky, serve to discount the problems they're going to have. It could be a lot worse than that. But I'll be conservative. And don't forget, the pensions and profit sharing plans, they all have their money in there, and they're going to take a 50% loss on blue chips. Can you imagine what it's going to be like on more speculative stocks? And so that's where I think we're headed. And they've been able to hold it up, but they can't do it forever. And I tell people to stay out of the market and get involved in gold and silver-related assets. And I told people to sell real estate. And that happened a couple of years ago, and the people who got out then did very well. And most of them invested their money in gold and silver, and they've done even better. And so that's the only way that I know to go. And I don't think there's much choice beyond that.
Well, first, what do you think about something? NVIDIA is sort of a sound stock, at least we feel it's a sound stock, like General Electric. They've certainly done very well through the years.
Well, General Electric is a lender of money in a derivative empire. They don't produce nearly the things that they did before. The big ticket items today are nuclear reactors, boilers, giant air conditioning units, but they've dropped out a lot of manufacturing things. I don't know what the percentage is, but if I had to guess, I'd say about 30% of their revenues probably come from manufacturing, and the rest come from the financial markets.
Well, now, what's going to happen to GE if we do really go into this recession you're anticipating?
The stock will go down considerably.
All right, so you're not then optimistic as far as General Electric is concerned?
No, not at all. None of the better quality companies, and even less for companies that are leveraged.
How about something
you
like
got to find out what companies are doing. A lot of them are using derivatives.
How about a company like Boeing? Certainly, they've through the years, I can look back on 30 years ago at Boeing, and certainly that stock has done very well through the years.
It's a government subsidiary.
Well,
all of the industrial complex is part of the government, the big companies, because they rely on government contracts. I mean, I remember Perot, when he was running, he was talking about the things that you all remember. And what he didn't tell you was that he had never done any contracts up until that time with anybody but the U.S. government.
Yeah, of course, I understand. He got this message very strong and clear. You better back away because if you want to keep on getting government contracts. And of course,
well,
he sort of faded.
That's true, and that meeting was held in Georgia. And I forget what the year was, but he was told in no uncertain terms that that's the way it's going to be.
Right.
And these people come right out and tell you, you know, you either do what we want to do or you're a dead man, either financially or otherwise. And our government kills people like there's nothing at all.
I think it's very difficult for people to believe, even though I've lost a number of people. At least I can think of three of them. I was thinking of them today, of people I've interviewed who've all died. I believe they were all victims of CIA hits. And this happens here, actually. I've interviewed three people who were government assassins. And they admit that they had been trained to be assassins. And one of them, of course, L.D. Brown, who actually at one time had worked for Bill Clinton. He didn't carry out his assignment, so he lost his position with the CIA. And one of them, of course, had been an assassin, that he wouldn't continue. And so he's living in hiding somewhere in the world today. And, of course, another one's a retired Special Forces officer who was trained as an assassin. And whether he actually assassinated I don't know. But he certainly had assignments to do that on several occasions. Even chiefs of state. So this thing really does go on. As difficult as it is for us to believe it, there really are some wicked and evil people there. That's why we need people in positions of authority who fear God. Because if we have people who are totally pragmatic in government, then no man's property or life is safe. Well, you know, as far as the investments right now, do you think that gold and silver, do you think that, which specific gold stock would you recommend to people? Do you make recommendations?
Well, I think in the better quality stocks, Agnico Eagle and Silver Standard are my favorites. I have four speculative stocks, which are exploration companies. One of them just went from $1 to $6, and that's called Rainy River. And Rainy River really exists. It's way up in northern Ontario, some of the best fishing in the world. And right now it's 31 degrees centigrade below zero there. And they have four drillers working on their property. I think that stock's going considerably higher. I have Capella Resources, which is not trading at the moment because this week they're coming out with some announcements. And I think that will do very well. And then I have two others that are evolving. One of them's called Northmont Mining, and the other one is called Alma Resources. And I'm going to have a few new ones here in a little while. I've had to go through hundreds of companies to find, you know, something reasonable. I don't recommend many stocks, probably 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 maybe over the past 5 years. And the reason why is it's too easy to be wrong. I've been there, and
let's go to Mark, who's calling us from Wisconsin here. We're running out of time.
Sure.
Hi, Mark. Did you have a question or comment?
Yes, I did. I had a question for Mr. Chapman. I'm a small businessman. I own a janitorial company, and I've bought silver, and I do have some food reserves. I'm wondering if there's a small business that actually operates and can operate in the black during a depression. If you've got any research in that area, I'd be interested to hear it.
Well, staples is what'll sell, things that people must have.
Mm-hmm.
And anything that's in the process of life that's a necessity will be used to some extent.
Right, right.
So it's peripheral products and particularly services that are going to get hurt.
It seems like the staples are pretty much centralized in the Walmarts and you know, the big chain grocery stores and all that. Is there any area, a niche market that someone such as myself could take advantage of?
I'm sorry to say I can't answer the question, and I just haven't done the research in that area.
Right, right. I was just hoping maybe you had something.
By chance, I might know, and you just found out I don't know everything.
Mark, I think it's going to be a very difficult time. I certainly get out of debt, get your wise to have some silver, maybe ought to have a little gold too, and of course just you're just going to have to make your preparations as best you can and then trust the Lord, because it's the only thing that's going to get us through. Is there is going to be civil unrest. Are there going to be riots? Are there going to be people put in detention camps? If there were not, they would not have passed the military commission law. They would not have passed the John Warner National Defense Authorization Act. I mean, they understand what lies ahead.
Right.
You do not, of course, repeal the Posse Comitatus law and habeas corpus, unless you're planning on using this dictatorial law. And even Senator Patrick Leahy of Connecticut said, what we have done is pass legislation that encourages the president to declare martial law. Hey, thanks very much for calling.
Thank you.
Good night. Well, Bob, you got 3 minutes to wrap up the program tonight.
But you always leave me with the good part.
Right. Well, that's all right. Because we always look forward to what you have to say.
Well, I think there's a lot of things we should be watching out there. There's a big meeting going on. Actually, there's two of them in Riga and Latvia. Riga was chosen. It's a very small country, that and Estonia both, because it's on the Russian border. And they think they're smart holding it there. To rattle the cage of the Russians, which I don't think is a very good idea. But one meeting is a military meeting, NATO, and that will include their new NATO associate members in the Middle East, including Israel. The second meeting has some pretty big names in it. Zbigniew Brzezinski, and many of the people from the State Department, up echelon Illuminati, and they're trying to cook something big up for the amalgamation of Europe. And it's a very, very important meeting, so you see nothing about it. I've written more about it. I wrote about it 2 or 3 weeks ago. And tomorrow's issue, it'll be in there as well. And I'll get the straight skinny on it as soon as the meeting is over, because I know people who will be able to get that information for me. But that's an important meeting. The situation in Iraq, they've been trying today, the administration and the Illuminati, because the thing was handled so badly. They've been trying to extricate for 2 years, and they haven't been able to do it. And so now they have to have Baker and Lee Hamilton and their commission tell everybody that we got to pull out, and Iran and Syria are going to help us. So you can look for that in the future, and you can look for a lower dollar and a lower stock market. These things are all coming, and I think gold and silver prices are going to go through the roof. I mean, they've been suppressed. It's like a spring. Once they start to take off, they're long gone, and fortunes will be made.
All right, fine. Well, I appreciate your thoughts, and I hope people would heed your advice. And it's going to be very interesting to see as this unfolds, and we're going to be talking to you in a week or so. And hopefully things will be a little clearer at that time, although it's going to be a long, slow process. But ladies and gentlemen, prepare for difficult times. God bless. Bob, we'll look forward to talking to you next week.
Well, thank you very much, and I'm anxious to come back.
Bye-bye. Okay, well,
bye-bye.
That was Bob Chapman from the International Forecaster, and it's always a pleasure. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and quite frankly, we do need your help to help us as we reach out 5 hours every single day across America with about 60 outlets, including our Saturday programs. Well, we want to keep all of them. We have an opportunity to reach people and to get them thinking, to begin challenging what's going on, and to introduce them to the other dimension, to the fact that we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political and ideological battlefield. So if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty and family and help us, why, we'd love to welcome you. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. You can join the Radio Liberty family of supporters to subscribe to the newsletter, or really whatever you'd like to do. But You can certainly go to our webpage at RadioLiberty.com and look at the various tape sets we have, videos we have, and some of them are ours, some of them are others, a large selection of books. And then, of course, the Berkey products, the healthcare products, and, of course, if you'd like a special catalog that has the books and the various products we have, and mentions the Berkey products I think everybody should begin laying in a supply, because if we do what I believe we're going to do, and believe me, the Military Commission Act and the John Warner National Defense Stabilization Act, or this legislation is a blueprint for dictatorship, because they know we're moving into a period of chaos. You need to have supplies on hand. Now, if you would like to know more about perhaps storage, food, things of that sort, we have a catalog there. And we're encouraging everybody to begin making preparations. You should need a good supply of health products on hand. You need to know what to take. And we can tell you that in our health catalog, which we'll be glad to send you free of charge, we've listed all of the various items that we, Barbara and I, take. There's a few things in there we don't, but you need to be taking large doses of vitamin C and large doses of vitamin D and E and fish oil and magnesium and selenium, and you need to have zinc. You need to have all of these various supplements, and you need to have them on hand. And then there are other things like the alibiotic, which is a combination of the various things like garlic and oil of oregano and elderberry and certainly echinacea and other things that you start to get a cold, you take them. You need to take large doses of vitamin D if you start to come down with the influenza or the cold, because, of course, many times you can ward that off with large doses of vitamin D. And it has certainly tremendous properties which most people don't understand and don't know about, and most doctors don't know about. You know, if we were out in the outside and getting a lot of sunlight, you know, we would be making about 10,000 units of vitamin D a day. And, of course, we're not out there with our shirts off, and so we're deficient. Most people are deficient in vitamin D. You remember when we used to have tuberculosis epidemics? What did they do to people? Why, they put them in sanitariums, and they gave them lots of fresh air and sunshine. And they got better from their tuberculosis. And I'm sure it was because they were manufacturing, at least in part, their own vitamin D. You know, and so there's so much to know. If you haven't read the books we carry, like Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life by Dr. Blaylock, or seen his new DVD, which is excellent, it's entitled Nutrition and Behavior, and you'd be amazed. The stories have come out where they've actually experimented with prisoners. The prisoners they give a good diet to don't come back to prison, most of them. If they keep them on the regular diet, so many of them continue with their violent manner of behavior. They know these things. They're just not telling you about it. Many of the schizophrenics on a proper diet can clear up. 100% of them, if they put on a gluten-free diet, would clear. But the average psychiatrist doesn't know that. They want to give you a pill or psychoanalyze you or something. You need to get, let me suggest Dr. Blaylock's excellent DVD, Nutrition and Behavior, or just ask for the Dr. Blaylock tape on nutrition and behavior. We can send you just an audio tape if you prefer. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for Radio Liberty.
Tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.